Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and good morning. And to today, Senator Weber's day to chair. We have Senate File 3289, and that is a request by the city of Echo to have the LGA penalty forgiveness for the city of.
Is this city of Morton, I think, for 3289?
City of Morton, I'm sorry. This one's the city of Morton.
Yep.
And so they're asking for that forgiveness so that the state will pay their LGA revenue to them by June 30th. And there's a lot of circumstances there that caused that filings and stuff to be late. Mr. Chair, I do believe we have somebody from the city of Morton on Zoom. I'm hoping we do.
I am here, Pam Ring.
Okay, very good. Please identify yourself for the record. And if you have any comments, you may proceed.
My name is Pam Ring. I'm the city clerk down in Morton. And the city would very much appreciate receiving the money back. There were a lot of circumstances that went into filing late. And it was with the best efforts of that I tried to get it the audit done in time. It just more and more circumstances popped on top of it, and it wasn't feasible to have it done on time, unfortunately.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Ring. And are there any questions as part of the committee? If not, Senator Klein will move Senate File 3289. And Senator Dames, do you have any final comments?
Just thank you for hearing the bill, and we would appreciate if it's laid over to be included in your omnibus bill.
Thank you, Senator Dames. Senate File 3289 is laid over for possible inclusion. Next, we will turn to Senate File 2788 and for the City of Echo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 2788 is for the City of Echo, also asking for forgiveness and to for the penalty, and to allow that their dollars be paid to them by June 30th by the state of Minnesota. Again, some circumstances that caused the late filings, and the request for both these cities, the number of dollars involved doesn't maybe always seem like too much, but it is a lot of money when you're starting to look at a small city and what they operate on. And so it is very important to them that we try to get this taken care of for them. And I do believe that there is somebody from the city of Echo also on Zoom.
Okay. Mr. Sweetman?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can somewhat faintly, but please identify yourself for the record.
Sure. My name is Raymond Sweetman. I'm the mayor of Echo. And again, we went through some personnel changes. We have a new clerk hired, and we hired some outside help to help us get it done and in. We did do a satisfactory audit, but we were unfortunate we did not be able to make the deadline, but we would very much appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Sweetman. Senator Murphy moves approval of Senate File 2788. Senator Dames, any final comment?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing this bill. It is very important to the city of Echo that we can help them out, and appreciate your consideration, and thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Dames. Senate File 2788 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator Dames.
Thank you, members.
Next, we will turn to Senate File 4021. Senator Howe. Welcome to the committee, Senator Howe. You may proceed when ready.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 4021 is a bill to try to rectify, I think, an oversight. The state of Minnesota used to give an exclusion for spouses of 100% disabled veterans. They used to give them 8 years. We changed that and made it a lifetime benefit for those folks as long as they stayed in their original home. Well, we had a little bit of an oversight, because what happened was there was a gap in that, and we We have now what we call sunsetters. So the 8 years sunsetted before we gave the lifetime exclusion, and there's a little gap in there where some of these spouses of 100% disabled veterans fell into that and they lost that exclusion. So this is would go back and correct that. And there is an amendment, and I think Mr. Silva would be able to explain that better than I. And so I would like to have someone offer that A1 amendment and have Mr. Silva explain.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Howell. Senator Klein moves Senate File 4021 and the A1 amendment. First, why don't you just explain the amendment quick, Mr. Silva?
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, the amendment is clarifying in nature, and it clarifies two points. First, it makes clear that the expiration for the qualifying spouse receiving the exclusion is due to the 2019 law change that Senator Howe indicated, where we changed from an 8-year carry forward to a lifetime benefit. And secondly, it makes clear that the eligible surviving spouse that can reapply is a spouse that previously received the exclusion rather than qualified. There may have been instances where a spouse qualified but was not actually receiving the exclusion. So this is a clarifying amendment, Mr. Chair, and there would be no change to the revenue estimate reflective of this amendment.
Okay, very good. Thank you. First, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Senator Howe, do you have any testifiers?
No, I don't. Okay. They're included in your package should be a letter from the from Miss Elaine Kiffmeyer, who brought this to our attention and was classified as a sunsetter. Okay. So that's the only testimony we have here. So
okay, very good. Are there any questions? Yes, Senator Murphy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Howe, for bringing this. Do you have a sense at all of how many sunsetters there are?
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, I don't have an estimation there. I think if you've got a fiscal note, it doesn't affect the state of Minnesota, but I don't think there's a large percentage of them. I think it's a small, narrow piece there where somebody got there. If someone else has that information, I don't have it. I know the county folks are here, but I don't think they have an estimation either on that piece, but it's a relatively small number.
Senator Howe, Senator Murphy, if you go to the revenue statement, it said that there were probably fewer than 10 homesteads that would become newly qualified for this.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. And the reason I'm asking is because this seems to be an effort to correct something that we didn't intend. I'm hoping that those people who would have qualified are we can figure out who they are, we can reach them so they know.
I was just whispered in my ear here by the Mr. Hilgart that it was 10 households.
Okay.
So really very, very small number.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You bet. Thank you, Senator Murphy. Any further comments, questions? Okay, Senator Howell, final comment.
I think this was an unintended consequence, and I hope that you see favor in correcting this oversight. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Howe. With that, Senate File 4021 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senate File 3200. I don't see Senator Bach here yet. Is he online?
Senator Bach is... I just got a message from Melissa. He's on his way. He's like 10 minutes out.
Okay. What we will do then, we will go on to Senate File 3882 so that we may keep things moving. Senator Klein, I will turn the gavel over to you. And then we will proceed with that.
Senator Bach is here.
We will proceed. We will proceed to his. Timing is everything, Senator Bach.
Uh,
We'll now turn to Senate File 3200, Senator Bach.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought my phone said I was fourth on the agenda. Are you guys working that fast?
I tell you, property taxes moves right along.
I was, Mr. Chairman, I was having breakfast with the former tax chair of the House, and we spent 4 years negotiating tax bills in this room in conference committee with the table in the middle here. So we were reminiscing about some very good memories that we had in this room. Mr. Chairman, House File or Senate File 3200 is an effort to try and build some more affordable housing. And basically what it does is it allows a housing project that has 20% affordable units in it to have a 50% market value exclusion. It's permissible language for a city. So if a city wants to do this, they can. They don't want to, they don't have to. Mr. Chairman, I did hear from some other units of government, specifically in my district, from one of my counties and from one of my townships, that wanted an opportunity to also have this include them rather than just in an incorporated city. So Mr. Chairman, there's an A2 amendment that really changes city to municipality. And then council maybe could walk through the other changes in it. There's some other changes in the amendment that were suggested by the Department of Revenue, kind of some cleanup language for the bill.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Sylvia.
Mr. Chair and members, as Senator Bach indicated, the majority of the amendment is changing city to municipality and allowing towns, cities, and unorganized territories with the county acting on their behalf to take advantage of this program. There are three additional changes, and I will note the line of the amendment. Line 1.7 deletes and development. Originally, as drafted, this proposal was for the development and redevelopment of affordable housing properties, but since the goal of the proposal is to incentivize the development of affordable housing, the redevelopment notation is deleted so that there would be no confusion or inconsistent treatment as to what would be considered redevelopment of an existing property. On line 1.13 of the amendment, we are providing one additional month for the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to certify to the county the properties that would qualify for this exclusion and that were otherwise met the requirements. And lastly, on lines 1.15 and 1.16, it's a change that under the bill as proposed, if a property would no longer qualify for this exclusion, the exclusion would be removed at the beginning of the next assessment year. But to be consistent with other exclusion programs existing in the current law, that has changed so that if the property would no longer qualify, the exclusion is removed for the current assessment year.
Thank you. Well, before we proceed, Senator Murphy will move Senate File 3200 and the A2 amendment. Do you have any further comments concerning the amendment, Senator Bach?
No, Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions, members? Okay, first, all those in favor of the A2 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. And we may proceed.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I should say I received a communication yesterday from the Association of Counties, and they have a little anxiety about cities being able to just exempt market value on new construction. I guess I commit to them. I've never been somebody to do something for a city and just run over a county. And I know there's always been a little bit of a tense relationship with the city's use of TIF and how counties really don't have anything to say about that. So Mr. Chairman, unless somebody in the committee has some suggestions, I think we probably need to continue to work with the counties to figure out if we can include them in the approval process where a city decides they'd like to do this. I just want to acknowledge this for everybody that if we can't get the counties comfortable with this, we probably shouldn't move it over the finish line.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
And I should say, Mr. Chairman, there's always talk in this committee when we kind of incentivize some kind of a development like this that it shifts property tax burden onto other property, current property owners. But, you know, the other side of that is if it never gets built, there's no shifting. So I think it's kind of a complicated scenario where we build it and some of the new capacity doesn't reduce taxes as much as it would have otherwise have, but, you know, new development reduces other people's taxes, existing property taxpayers. And if it doesn't get built, nothing changes. So, I mean, still we're adding new tax capacity. I think it's, you know, we probably call it shifting in this room. I'm just not sure that's quite accurate because we're still adding new tax capacity, which should lower other taxes from of the other property owners. But so I think the word shifting probably gets used a little bit too loosely in reference to this. But I do think I think everybody knows we need more affordable housing units built. And the current system just isn't getting them built. And unfortunately, the city of St. Paul is making it even harder in this city to accomplish that right now. I'm hoping that we can find some way to mitigate some of the challenges that investors are feeling right now in St. Paul. And this could be one of the tools that might help with that. Mr. Chairman, that's all I have. But Kelly Dorn here, who has built a lot of housing in this area and around the country, is here. He's the one that brought me the bill as an idea. And in fact, I met with him yesterday. He says, you know, Tom, I may never build a building that this applies to, but I just think overall for the housing industry, this is a tool that developers and cities would be helpful to have at their disposal. And if no one uses it, I guess we haven't lost anything.
Very good. Thank you, Senator. Mr. Duran, please identify yourself for the record and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kelly Dorn, and I appreciate being here to give this testimony, and I appreciate Senator Bach's introduction and support for this bill. This bill was actually introduced a few years ago, pre-COVID, in a different version by Senator Limmer, and unfortunately, because of COVID, didn't go anywhere. But during that time, we've had an opportunity to talk to a lot of people about it. We've met with a lot of different people. We've met with city elected officials. We've met with city staffs. We've met with the League of Cities. We've met with a whole host of other stakeholders that have provided input and guidance in trying to make it as best it can make. But the universal agreement was is that the current system of financing new construction of affordable housing just simply is not working. We're not able to build enough supply to meet the demand. And it's not just an urban problem, it's a statewide problem. And so this has been a priority for many government bodies, many cities for a number of years, but yet we continue to fall behind. I just wanna throw a couple statistics out to you. The Met Council projected the need to build 45,000 new affordable housing units from 2011 to 2020. Only 16,500 of those units were actually built. At the same time in 2017, under the Dayton administration, there was a task force study that indicated that the state needed 300,000 additional housing units built, and of those 60,000 would need to be affordable. We're not even close to being on pace to do that thus far, and we're not achieving these goals because guys like me don't play. Only about 10 or 15% of the developers in the state participate in affordable housing developments. And the reason for that is it's too complicated and it takes too long. If you talk to even the nonprofit affordable housing developers, they will tell you that it's not uncommon to have 8 or 10 different sources of capital in a typical project, and it can take 3 or 4 years to assemble all that and in order to start construction. In addition, the legal expenses of doing all that is 3 or 4 times higher than it would be for just a market rate apartment building. It doesn't make sense and it's too complicated. And if it was working, if all these current sources were working, then we wouldn't have this demand problem because the supply would have been able to keep up. So we took it upon ourselves to try to figure out how to do this simpler, how to make this simpler, how to attract a private capital, how to attract developers like myself and others to come into the market because we can understand it, because we're not all the brightest bulbs, okay? And so we want to be able to understand it. We want to be able to explain it to our investors, and we want to be able to explain it to the lenders. And ultimately, we wanted to try to make this revenue neutral for the property owner. So to the extent that there was a tax adjustment, that would offset the difference in rent for the affordable unit. Now, we've learned here recently that the League of the Cities has also said, well, could we scale this? Could this be scaled? And I actually think that could work. It's a mathematical equation. Both sides would have to move, but it has potential to be scalable, and we'd be happy to work with the league to try to accomplish that. As Senator Bach said, is there a tax shift here? Well, this is unlike TIF, okay? In a TIF program, the full property is assessed, and that assessed value then goes to the tax capacity, and that correspondingly creates the tax base for the community, even though some of those taxes end up being brought back to the private sector to pay-as-you-go TIF note, or in rare cases, a bond. In this case, there is no creation of that higher assessed value. The assessed value is reduced. I would argue that there is no tax shift for this, but I'm not an expert. And I would like to, we would like to be able to work with some experts to determine if our hypothesis is correct, that there is really, and it really is no tax shift on this. Further, because of the simplicity of it, we think that it'll be widely used and it will reduce the amount of TIF that is being used. So TIF does create a full transfer. TIF does take 100% of the tax revenue to pay off typical pay-as-you-know. TIF also has interest involved, which magnifies the cost of this multiple times over the life of that TIF note. There's no interest involved in this. So it actually, over time, will save millions and millions and tens of millions of dollars that can be used for other sources that are now going to pay interest on TIF notes. So this product will create more incentives, will bring more people to the table, will bring more private capital to this need that we have to build affordable housing. And we'll create literally many thousands of additional housing units with this simple tool. And I'm here for any questions that we have.
Thank you, Mr. Doran. I have a couple of questions. If I am an existing apartment owner and a city adopts this, aren't I going to be a little concerned that they're giving an unfair competitive advantage to the new development at that point?
Well, it depends what kind of building you own. If you're a fair market rate value, I don't think it does anything to you than any other building would do. If you're in the affordable side and you're achieving that affordability through participation in a TIF program when the building was built, or a 4D program, you're getting a different type of subsidy that helps you compete. And at the end of the day, the demand for this kind of affordable housing at this level is so great that those units would be gone like that. The minute the building opens, these units will be leased and occupied. And I don't think the rest of the market rate affects that any different than if it was a full market rate building.
In rural Minnesota, we have many smaller communities who basically simply need housing. Mm-hmm. They're not really concerned at this point whether it qualifies as an affordable complex with the at least 20% or what have you. And Senator Bach, have you thought about the possibility of allowing smaller communities based on their population size to be involved in this program without the affordable housing designation?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have not. That probably is something good for this committee to give some consideration to. You know, we can't, in rural areas, as you know, and both of our districts are pretty deeply rural, we just don't have the breadth of developers interested in building smaller, maybe 8-16 unit buildings, that there's just a lot more economies of scale in a 200 unit building, right? So that's where the investment tends to go. But we're clearly going to have to do something with workforce type housing, not necessarily affordable, but workforce type housing in communities that are badly needed. My own little town of Cook, 500 people, our post office burned down a few years ago, and there were 10 apartments above it, and it never got replaced. And our old hospital a number of years before that burned down, that was probably about 16 rental units in it, and that never got replaced. So the hospital, which is the hospital nursing home, which is the largest employer in town, people have to commute 50 miles to work at the hospital because there's just no place to even rent in the community that they work in. So I'm open to any ideas that people have how we can build more workforce housing in these small rural towns, because it's a serious, serious problem.
Mr. Chair, can I add?
Yes, Mr. Doran.
This bill is not meant to be a cure-all. It's meant to be an additional tool. As Senator Bach indicated, it's totally permissive at the municipal level. It will, the primary still difficulty in many rural parts of the state is that the rent, achievable rents, do not justify a return on the construction costs. This program will help. It will likely, in some of those instances, require additional help beyond this program. That could be in the form of a discounted value on the land. It could be other incentives that a local community or a local business might be willing to provide. This program will work in a lot of places, though. It will work throughout the metro area. It'll work in places like Duluth and Rochester and St. Cloud and in other communities like that. It'll be very close to making those communities work. But the smaller rural communities will need additional assistance beyond this.
I would just like to comment, a community in my district had received, it was somewhat in excess of $1 million through Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and they were not able to find a developer that could take that money, comply with all the rules, and make it work financially. I mean, that is the problem of our current system, particularly in greater Minnesota. And, you know, and I could see if they were allowed to offer something locally, that it might tip the scale, you know, in those situations. But anyway, members, are there any questions on your part? Senator Klein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Bach. And I appreciate creative solutions to affordable housing in the state, or housing in general, as Senator Weber referred to. And I do think this committee has a significant role in sort of crafting those solutions. So thank you for the bill. I also think it's a fairly good argument in response to the concern about shift from you, Senator Bach, that if you never build these things in the first place, then the residential property owners are already sort of bearing that property tax burden. So how much impact does the shift argument actually have? I'm sort of new to housing issues, and I had a question just specifically about the mechanism of ensuring that these are affordable units. And it says that 80% of them have to be occupied by people in a sort of certain income portfolio. And I guess I was just wondering, instead of sort of legislating that rents have to be a certain amount or a certain percentage of income or something, I just wonder who assesses that 80% of the people living in these bodies have an income. How do they obtain access to those people's income levels, and who sort of audits that and makes sure that somebody's in compliance with that? How does that work?
If I could answer that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Doran.
Mr. Chair, Senator Klein. That language has been, here's the intent behind that language. Let me say it that way. The intent was that there will be an annual certification of this that will be required to go through the Minnesota Housing Finance Authority. At that moment in time, there could be a vacancy in one of these 20% of these units or more, okay? And it was meant to set up a little bit of a ability to have a vacancy at the time you need to certify, because if somebody's turned over, somebody's moved out, somebody got married, whatever the case may be. The 80%, there's no magic to that. That could be 90%, it could be some other number. But that was the purpose of it, is not to decertify a building simply because for at a moment in time when the certification is done, not all of the units were available or occupied, okay? It is not meant to provide the ability to change the percentage or to reduce it or to not make those units available. That is not the intent of that language.
Senator Klein.
Thank you, Mr. Doran, and thank you, Senator Bach. I guess I still am left with the question, though. Couldn't there be a bad actor who sort of benefits from this and then, you know, populates the building with affluent clients, and there's no sort of mechanism to check on that, or, you know, ensure that the 80% of people that are living in them have a certain income amount? And I think, as far as I'm able to tell, and again, I'm new to this issue, but that seems to be a weakness of the bill.
Mr. Doran?
Mr. Chair, Senator Klein, again, I think as part of the annual certification process, it requires that it be certified that the people that are in those units qualify to be in those units. If you're not comfortable with that and would like to tighten up that language, that's perfectly fine. That the intent is to only allow some flexibility for the advent of the date of certification, that there might be an empty unit or two.
Very good. Oh, Senator Murphy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Bach, for bringing this proposal. It's good to see you, Mr. Doran. You and I have had a chance to talk together about this issue, and it is, as everybody has talked about already, a statewide issue. The issue of a safe place to live is a statewide issue. Affordable housing is a statewide issue. We can call it workforce housing, as people do in other parts of the state. And having spent time with Mr. Doran and others who work in the development of affordable housing, it is exceptionally complicated, maybe on purpose complicated. And what is clear to me is the tools that we're using, the complication of the tools, is not answering the need for Minnesotans until we still have the issue of rent that's too high for people. And St. Paul voters took action on that. And we can debate that, but the voters took a vote. That's sacred from my perspective. We have people that are living without a safe home. And I, you know, I live in St. Paul. I continue to see a lot of development happening here in Minneapolis. And I find myself in other parts of the state. There is construction happening, and that is good news, but I am struck and have been now for a number of years at how complicated we have made the financing of affordable housing. And the demand is there, and the interest on developers' part is there, and yet we are not meeting the goal for the people of Minnesota. And that is a question that I think the legislature needs to answer. I'm not sure that this is the right solution. Senator Bach, I'm really happy to know that you're interested in talking with the counties and making sure they're a part of it, because of course, municipalities and counties and school districts rely on the property tax for much of their work. And when we put pressure on that, we put pressure on those communities. So I appreciate you coming to the committee, sharing your expertise with us today, Mr. Doran and Senator Bach. I appreciate you bringing this forward. I'm not sure that it's ready yet, but I understand the way you work, Senator Bach, and have faith in your ability to continue to bring this to the place where it could be acceptable for the people of Minnesota.
Thank you. Senator Bach?
Mr. Chair, I should say that if you look at the duration on this market value exclusion on line 4.24, this isn't a permanent exclusion. This is really intended to buy down the early years of the debt service on the investment that the developer's making. So a city will have some discretion whether they want to do this for this exclusion for 10 years up to 20 years. So cities will have some flexibility on it. But I don't want anybody to think that this building is going to permanently be taxed at a lower level, because that certainly is not the intent. It's pretty clear in the bill.
Could I add something to that?
Yes, Mr. Doran.
And to Senator Murphy's comments. I think one of the other side effects that will happen if this program is established is that right now, all of these buildings, whether they're 20% affordable, 50% affordable, 100% affordable, are all feeding at the same trough. They're all looking for either a tax credit or a TIF deal or a 4D or a grant or whatever it is, and they're all competing for those dollars. And that's why it takes so long. And that's why it's so complicated and compounds the complication. If this program is adapted and used, a lot of these mixed use buildings, which will meet the requirements of many of the municipal bodies that have these mandates on them, then what will happen is that some of these other resources, the TIF, the grants, the tax credits, can be more focused on those deeply affordable projects that are desperately in need of capital in order to get built. And that will have a huge impact. And most of those projects also require social services. And so it will lower the burden on the nonprofits in terms of competing for some of these capital resources. And it will make those capital resources stretch further and serve that community better. And that will be a side effect of this.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to comment concerning this bill? I know we have some housing people here today, and you're certainly welcome if you wish to comment on it. And so, all right. If there are no further questions from the members, Senator Bach, final comments.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm looking forward to getting some feedback from the colleagues. I'm going to say it again. So be happy to work with you and the counties on that to make sure we can find some level of harmony between the cities and the counties. I don't want to put them at odds with each other. I know in my own county, oftentimes my county commissioners are upset because our large city, the city of Duluth, does historically has done quite a bit of TIF, and the county's not involved in that process at all. So I do want to find a path where the counties have got some input in this program.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Bach. With that, members, Senate File 3200 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
As amended.
As amended, yes. Once a chair, always a chair, right, Senator Bach?
How you doing? This is the address which I need to this person. I can add more.
Okay, that's the sign. So this is the right one here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have to bill?
Yep.
Yep.
Got it? Got it. All right, thanks. All right, it's 3200. 3288. Starting at 8:00. Bad roads today, Senator Weber. Bad roads.
Understood. Understood.
So we have Senate File 3882. Senator Weber, do you have any amendments?
I do not, Mr. Chair.
Okay. You go ahead and proceed.
Thank you so much. Yes, I move Senate File 3882. It was, we've just had a discussion about the issues as to the availability and the supply of housing all across Minnesota, as far as that is concerned. And there was a reference made to the rent control issue that recently took place in the capital city here. And what this bill does, it's a fairly simple bill, but what it does is it provides for a general tax levy restriction on communities to the same amount of the percentage of rent that they have allowed our multifamily housing people to charge in terms of an increase each year. And I think that the reason that I have brought this bill forward is that a lot of times there are many things that happen, whether we're talking about state government or local government, where we don't necessarily have a full discussion of the issues that are out there. I have heard the statement made by those who proposed and support the rent control measure that we have landlords making 50% profit. Well, I don't think those people who make those kind of claims have ever owned or managed those kind of properties. And certainly there is no truth to those kind of statements. But today I thought we would have this discussion because at a time when we are experiencing a serious need for housing, what we see then is a local decision that actually will keep housing from happening. And the development of new housing will slow dramatically, and the need will continue to accelerate. And so, Mr. Chairman, I would basically turn the table over to testifiers who wish to speak to this issue today. We have six of them that are listed in the agenda, and the first one being Cecil Smith from the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association, who will share some information with you concerning their business.
Thank you, Senator Weber. Yeah, we do have several testifiers. So first one, as you mentioned, Cecil Smith, welcome. Please welcome the committee. Please state your name and who you're with for the record. You may begin. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you, Senator Weber. My name is Cecil Smith. I'm the president and CEO of Minnesota Multi-Housing Association, known as MHA. I appreciate the opportunity to join you today and provide MHA strong support for Senate File 3882, the rent-controlled cities levy cap proposal. In St. Paul, voters adopted a poorly conceived rent control policy, which has produced chaos for housing providers and developers, residents and rental properties, and the city as a whole. The chaos caused by an extreme policy and subsequent market disruption has paused over 3,300 units of housing. Those housing units represent nearly $1 billion of capital investment and desperately needed housing infrastructure in the community. The city has added uncertainty to the rent control policy through a slow and confusing deployment of the rules and ordinance amendments around the policy. There are still more questions than answers. In addition, concerns over rent control forced housing providers to consider adjusting their rents prior to the May 1st implementation date. Many have done so, and more than a few legislators have had personal experience with this effect. Minnesota is in a housing crisis. The paused rental housing in St. Paul would help address the serious housing shortages felt locally and statewide. But a recent survey of apartment investors by the National Multifamily Housing Council revealed 23% would not invest in Minnesota due to the rent control policy that was adopted. The decision to not invest here comes from the understanding that policies like St. Paul's can be adopted in other Minnesota communities. While this bill does not limit or modify the ability to adopt rent control, we believe this bill would be beneficial for housing providers and communities which have or will adopt such a policy. This bill would alleviate some of the negative impacts of rent control policies through capping the levy in rent control cities and keeping the largest operating cost of housing providers in line with the rent caps. Price controls do not work. It's an economic reality, but they're easier to sustain if your input costs are also controlled. This is the principle of centrally planned economies. In our economy, one of the few things that can be controlled as an input cost in housing is property taxes. Hence, if we're going to have rent control, then we should have input cost controls, especially property taxes. I find it fascinating to hear the counter arguments to this bill. Quote, levy limits create distortions in local budgetary matters that can prevent a city from addressing important local needs. Well, that's the same argument that I made about rent control and property management during the campaign. Capping rents prevents me from addressing important property needs. Another prediction I made about rent increases in St. Paul sounded like this statement. Quote, the levy limit would not only become a ceiling on the city's levy, but would almost assuredly become the levy increase floor as city councils try to preserve future levy authority. Price controls lead to market distortions and the value or pricing of goods. Rents are raised to the rent cap and levies are raised to the levy cap. And this bill will be necessary, especially in St. Paul. Over the past 4 years in St. Paul, the levy increase has averaged 5.6% each year. And looking at property taxes collected on apartments in St. Paul, in 2011, the taxes were $37 million. Last year, they were $98 million. St. Paul has not had a crazy apartment building boom over the last decade. In fact, less than 10% growth. But the annual taxes collected has increased and averaged over 11% each year. With property tax increases like these and rent control in St. Paul, we need to see Senate File 3882 passed into law. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. We ask members to support this very important legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Next up, we have...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can I just ask one question, please?
Yeah, Mr. Smith? We got several to go, but go ahead, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Smith, thank you for being here and for your testimony. Did I understand correctly that you were involved in the election in St. Paul last year?
Yes, I was involved in opposing the rent control policy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next up, Joe Abraham. And probably on remote Zoom. Well, there he is. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you're with for the record. You may begin, sir. Thank you.
Of course, Mr. Chair, committee. Senator Weber, thank you so much. My name is Joe Abraham. I'm a partner at Pergola Management. We own and operate rental housing in the Twin City metro area, and our offices are also based here in St. Paul. And I've been a proud resident of St. Paul as well since 1994. Pergola Management operates naturally occurring affordable housing, which you all hear all the time as NOAA. Over the course of the past 25 years, we've been buying 1920s and 1960s buildings in need of rehab in order to make sure we preserve that housing. Our rehabs are all inclusive, so energy efficiency upgrades like windows, roofs, insulation, energy efficiency heating systems, life safety improvements, and then full aesthetic unit and common area improvements that you might expect. These are clean, safe, dignified rental housing homes. And because of our long-term local owner buy and hold model, we've been able to consistently keep 2,000 happy customers in our community housed with rents at or below 50% AMI. So these are beautiful rentals, very well served, and kept affordable so that if you are in that particular area, you earn 50% of the median income, that you are not cost burdened living in this housing. I've watched a lot of testimony over the past few years at both the municipal and at the state level on a wide range of public policy related to housing. I'm continually amazed at the lack of a rudimentary understanding of our business. I'll share the reality, and this is something that every single apartment operator industry knows with certainty to be true. For every dollar of rent, 50 cents is dedicated to operations. So that's utilities, taxes, supplies, employee wages. I suspect that's sometimes where this confusion comes in over 50% margin. That's just the start. Those are those operating expenses I mentioned. The next 42 to 46-ish cents goes to non-operating but essential support, and then primarily the debt service to have that property. People don't own these apartment buildings. Very few are owned. They're financed like you would a home or any other major piece of capital equipment. The majority of our expenses are outside of our control and are passed through to the residents. Currently, we face double-digit increases in property taxes, utility rates and utility infrastructure, insurance, supplies, and wages, among a variety of other topics and other categories. There are a lot of reasons to reject artificial controls to rent in a market with a 20-year average rent growth of 1.8%. But when a municipality proposes a limit on a gross income and no cap on something they control, like property taxes that make up our largest expense, it seems unreasonable to me and disingenuous. The very people using the platform to talk about why they deem something unreasonable rent growth continue to propose increases to the levy on property taxes, utility rates, inspections and licensing fees, and other city, county, state fees. Today, I'm here to testify in support of Senate File 3882 to bring local levies in line with rent control restrictions. I bring my experience as an operator with firsthand knowledge of what it takes to own and actively manage this rental housing. The rent control policy that was adopted in this community is troubling because of the high rate of inflation, cost to recruit and retain great staff, maintenance costs, and taxation. My business model providing naturally occurring affordable housing is in danger due to the costs and limitations of the rent control policy. Aside from a repeal of the rent control language, the state and the city have a limited ability to alleviate many of these concerns, which is why I'm here to support this file. This proposal will provide some certainty that cities with rent control would have their levy cap to the same respective amount. I want to thank Chair and Senator Weber for authoring this proposal. I want to thank members of the committee for having me and listening today. And I realize we don't have time because of other speakers, but any of you at any time want to look behind the curtain and see how an actual property operates. We got 50 buildings. I'll print them right out of our software and be happy to share with you in great detail. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Abraham. Thank you for the testimony. Next up, Paul Eager. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you're with for the record. You may begin. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Paul Egger. I'm Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. We're the statewide business trade association with over 21,000 members across the state. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of Senator Weber's Senate File 3882. Minnesota Realtors has not been a supporter of levy limits because we believe that local elected officials should make levy decisions and be accountable to their constituents. However, with both Minneapolis and St. Paul passing ballot measures on rent control last November and the provisions in current law that allows additional local units of government to enact rent control if approved by the voters, we think it's appropriate for the legislature to consider Senator Weber's Senate File 3882 to mitigate some of the negative impacts of rent control policies on rental property owners and the overall housing market. Senate File 3882 would create a reasonable policy where if a city passes a rent control ordinance limiting rent increases for privately owned property, the city would be held to the same standard with respect to increasing its general operating levy. Rent control only controls the ability for property owners to increase rents, does not do anything to control all the costs rental property owners must cover related to owning the property and the general upkeep and maintenance that needs to be addressed on a continual basis. Rent control is counterproductive to addressing our housing supply and affordability challenges. Instead, the focus should be on how to create the conditions that will result in more housing of all types to better meet consumer demand and achieve a market that is better balanced between landlords and tenants and buyers and sellers. Property taxes for rental property owners subject to rent control policies are not controlled under current law, and Senator Weber's bill would provide some minimal relief in those situations. Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Iger. Next up, Dana Kennedy.
Yes, thank you very much. My name is Dana Kennedy, and I live in St. Paul. I was born into an upper middle class family, but alcoholism killed my father in his 30s. My mother had to sell everything and move all five of us into a two bedroom apartment. We lived on the floor on mattresses with cockroaches and weevils. We were beholden to terrible landlords and sometimes had to move twice in a year. So I worked hard for the promise of rent stabilization last year. I can't stand the thought of one more child living through the crazy instability that moving created for my family. Long before rent stabilization was ever on the ballot, we had a housing crisis across this state. And I am wondering why developers and investors were unable to address the crisis then, and I wish they would stop blaming rent stabilization now. When I heard that Senate File 3882 is designed to limit how much money a city can receive from the legislature, and if they pass rent stabilization or rent control and have to resort to using a special levy, I was deeply saddened and deeply concerned. When voting rights are being suppressed across the country, I can't believe this body would even consider a bill that would stoke economic anxiety and fear of retaliation in cities that have passed rent stabilization or could in the future. The message this sends is bone chilling. Every Minnesotan across race, gender, and geography should have their vote count and not be punished by the select and powerful few. Again, every vote counts. Please don't tell the people of this great state that they don't. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Mary Kay Capici, then it'll be Dan Quinlan, and I think it's Jenny DeLuccia in that order. So next up, right now we have Mary Kay Capici. I hope I got that right. Please state your name, who you're with for the record. You may begin. Thank you.
My name is Mary Kay Capecki, and I'm a resident of South St. Paul, Minnesota. I am 65 years old and a retired elementary education teacher, mother of 5+3, and grandmother of 2. I'm here to speak on SF 3882. I decided to help rally and encourage voters to turn out for the elections and to vote because I believe that voting is a cornerstone of our democracy. I also believe that every citizen has a right for their voice to be heard and that voting freely without restrictions is a right to be exercised by all. This belief and right was taught by example to all of my children who, like their parents, exercise their voting rights too. I'm dismayed, discouraged, disheartened, and in disbelief to discover that Bill Senate File 3882 is effectively financially punishing over 100,000 people who voted yes to pass a rent stabilization ballot initiative in St. Paul and Minneapolis. I'm concerned that this creates fear and anxiety in cities across Minnesota that could pass this policy in the future. I'm sure that you as elected officials and do not want to send this message to your constituents that their votes don't count when a select few don't like the outcome of a vote, or that their city could be penalized for honoring the vote and the will of their people. For this and for many other reasons, I am asking you with great gratitude for your public leadership to please vote against SF 3882 and listen to and honor the will of the people. Let's send the right message to all the people of the great state of Minnesota. Thank you for your time and for listening to my story.
Thank you, Ms. Kopecky. Now we have Dan Quinlan. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name, who you're with for the record. You may begin. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Dan Quinlan. I'm a leader with Isaiah. I live in the city of West St. Paul, and I attend Mayflower Church in South Minneapolis. I have a concern about Senate File 3882, which places unnecessary barriers on cities like St. Paul and Minneapolis as they try to implement their vote, what their voters chose in stabilizing rents. Today's housing problems are well documented. There are different solutions being proposed at different levels of government throughout the state and nation. In the case of Minneapolis and St. Paul, local ballot referendums have been held, and it is clear that the voters have spoken. The majority of voters in both cities have asked their government to implement rent stabilization legislation. When they have spoken, it is government's job to implement their will. Senate File 3882, in my view, creates obstacles for cities that have passed rent stabilization to raise their levy and receive money from our government in the same way other cities currently do. It sounds to me like a warning shot to other cities that might consider rent stabilization and is designed to intentionally reduce their local prerogative. It is my understanding that there are many variables that feed into what a city sets as its levy: state aids, changes in local fees, spending variables that may vary from year to year, and local challenges they may face. Dictating what that levy can be seems fraught with danger and an invitation to future problems. State governments are the laboratories for our federal democracy. It is just as true that local governments are laboratories for state governance. Let's not discourage important initiatives. Let's see what we can learn. I would urge you to vote no on Senate File 3882. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Quillen. And last up is Ginny DeLuca. You're online, I believe.
Yes, I am. Good morning. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm Ginny DeLuca and a homeowner in St. Paul. And whether you're white, black, or brown, or how much money you make, all Minnesotans deserve to have their votes respected. As a state, we pride ourselves in high voter turnout and civic engagement. And last year, St. Paul and Minneapolis voters got civically involved. The Minnesota legislature requirements were followed, and thousands of signatures were collected, verified, and rent stabilization went on the ballot. Over 100,000 voters in St. Paul and Minneapolis voted yes for rent stabilization last November. And that's why I'm deeply concerned about Senate File 3882, which would financially punish voters and the cities, respecting the will of those voters, to pass rent stabilization at the local level. How can a few elected officials override the will of the people and our democracy? The select few should not have more power than the will of the people. This bill feels unnecessary, as there'll be a process for landlords and developers in St. Paul to seek exemptions based on concerns of reasonable return on investment. Other cities have this policy, and they have similar processes. It really would be refreshing to see Senate committees focus on more solutions to the problems of our housing crisis and not spend time dismantling democracy and stoking fear. Please do not move forward with passing SF 3882. Respect the will of the people. Respect democracy. Do not pit our citizens' right to vote against our city's ability to raise levies. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. DeLuca. That concludes testimony. Members, questions? Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Weber. Sometimes we disagree with one another, even though I don't like it, and today is one of those days. I don't support this proposal, and it really is about my sacred belief in the will of the voters and their choice in the last election. I don't talk about my own election loss very often, but in 2018, I lost a hard-fought primary, and when we were clear that I had not prevailed in that election, I put my suit on. I went to a great big brewery in St. Paul that was filled with people who were excited about that election. I went up on the stage. I thanked the voters for their participation and their support. I congratulated the person who prevailed in that election, and now Governor Walz. I asked everybody in that room to get behind his candidacy. I stepped off the stage, heartbroken, and I went back to work in the election because I believe that the will of the voters is that important. And a principle that I honor in this country is that there is a peaceful transfer of power in our elections, something that is being litigated again in this country in a way that I think is very, very threatening. There are efforts in other parts of the country right now to assert legislatures and legislators' authority over the will of voters. It's taking different forms. It's happening in different places. In our legislature, in the Senate, in addition to this proposal, attacking the vote of the will of the voters in St. Paul is an outright effort to preempt that election. And one member of our body said on the record that the bill's intention was to nullify that election. I think that's wrong. And this is another attempt to do that. While I understand and appreciate all of what comes with the vote that happened last November in St. Paul and the challenges that that presents and the work that is happening in the city with a 41 member group that is well represented by voters and developers and renters and homeowners, they are doing the work of figuring out how to implement this. That is important work. But the election that happened last November, and I appreciate Mr. Smith being honest with us that he participated in that election, and they did spend a lot of money to try and defeat that ballot initiative. St. Paul voters took a vote, and we shouldn't use the power of the purse here to undo that vote or any other measures, because as they say, the voice of the people is the voice of God. And I believe that here. St. Paul voters took a vote, so did the people in Minneapolis. They have an important job to do to figure out how to implement the will of the voters in that city. We shouldn't interrupt that. And this proposal does exactly that. And I would respectfully ask you to lay it on the table because I don't believe that this body, and I don't believe that you are interested in upending the will of the voters. It's too important to our democracy. So I just want to let you know, respectfully, Senator Weber, I don't agree with this proposal, and I don't think it should advance any further than this hearing today. Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy, obviously the plan is to, for this
proposal to be laid over for possible inclusion. And I guess I'm first, are there any other questions that before I would use my time to respond as to my final comments.
Okay, all right, Senator Klein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Weber. And like Senator Murphy, I this is the Property Tax Committee, and the property tax implications of this bill are interesting, and the arguments on, about the impact of rent controls are interesting. But I'm more interested, I guess, in this bill about the impacts on democracy, and I think it does raise some serious questions about which branch of government has correct authority. Is it, you know, does the voice of a popular referendum in a municipality have authority over our ability to restrict that here at as elected representatives at the state? I think those are serious questions, and maybe bigger than the scope of this committee, but definitely worthy of consideration. And I'd like to move that this bill be referred to state government.
Senator Weber, is that do you have a question or is that it, Senator Klein?
It's a motion on the table.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I basically would oppose that. This is a property tax issue, and so I believe that it's proper for it to be laid over for possible inclusion in our property tax bill, and I would just encourage no vote on that motion.
Request a roll call. Klein.
Request a roll call on the motion to refer to state to local government. State government. Well, I wonder if that's even a proper committee for it. I mean, this is not a state, it's a state issue as far as property taxes, right? But is it it's a local issue for with a local election, right? Senator Weber, any thought?
I think you might be right. I don't know if legal counsel has an opinion regarding where this the proper route for a bill such as this.
Mr. Sylvia?
Mr. Chair, members, you know, it's certainly a member's prerogative to make a motion to refer to any committee that the member believes would be appropriate to hear the bill. So I wouldn't be able to comment on, you know, the ability to make that recommendation. I will say that you know, other than, I guess, the impact that this would apply statewide, it would be appropriate, at least for the property tax subcommittee and then the tax committee itself to hear this. I'm not sure if any other committees would necessarily have jurisdiction other than the state government committee would, or the local government committee rather, would have the ability to review the levy limit statute itself, but not necessarily this bill. If that's helpful at all, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Klein. You had a comment?
Yeah, I'm open to the advice of the chair and council, and I amend my motion to refer to local government.
Senator Weber?
Mr. Chairman, I will still oppose that.
Yeah, I would, just my 30 seconds worth, I was interested that it's interesting that it's an election issue. Nobody's overturning an election here. Cities and counties and townships exist by statute. State government created these entities by statute. It's in statute. So that's number one. Number two, that is, we're not overturning it. And Senator Weber, is this saying that the election, the local election on the rent control is null and void? Is there anything in your bill that suggests or intimates that it undoes the election?
Mr. Chairman, no, there is not anything that undoes the election.
So this is simply, I'll just make one more comment. The issue here is that Mr. Quillen made a point that putting a levy limit here would impose difficulties in a local government because of all the variables and things they don't know about cost and inflation and state aid. Well, that's simply the similar issue with somebody trying to run a good, clean, effective, affordable housing unit. They're impacted by things that they can't control. But I would say that this is not an election issue. Nobody's suggesting that this is somehow overturning an election. It's just exercising the prerogative of the state to protect the citizens and protect affordable housing. We're trying to protect affordable housing in these communities, which this rent control will destroy. Senator Weber, you had one more comment?
No, that's fine. We'll proceed with the vote.
Okay, so members, we have a motion to, by Senator Klein, to re-refer this bill to local government. Roll call has been requested, so we will take the roll.
All right, roll call for subcommittee on property tax for SF 3882, Senator Weber?
No.
Senator Murphy?
Yes.
Senator Klein?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Two nays, two yeses.
Being tied, the motion does not pass. Any other questions, members? Yes, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your indulgence. I do want to just respond to what you had to say. Now, we are powerful. I don't talk about that very often, but.
I'm sorry, Senator Murphy, my machine kicked off here. There we are. What was your comment?
Is it functioning again, Mr. Chair?
Yes, it is now.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So you had a comment. That's what I was asking. My machine went out, so I didn't hear what you said. Did you have a comment?
I was going to say I'm powerful and interrupted your machine, but I'm only kidding about that part. The power of the purse and the use of that as a threat. And you heard it from our testifiers today. The view that this body would be taking a vote to use the power of the purse to react to municipalities, cities who take a vote, a rightful vote, is a way to nullify an election. And no, you don't agree with me, but I'm hearing a lot from the people who live in the city where I live. And they know that this legislature in a couple of different ways is trying to undo the will of the voters in St. Paul. They don't like that. And it is a trend the Republican Party in different parts of the country, and I'm worried about that.
I'm gonna stop you right there. What we're talking about is state of Minnesota, city of St. Paul, and property taxes, and trying to maintain affordable housing in these two cities, which you're apparently not interested in doing.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Senator Murphy.
That is an unfair accusation of.
Well, so was yours. How does it work? Feel good?
Mr. Chair, sorry to get under your skin, don't mean to. I think that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, another member of this body with another proposal said on the record in the committee, this bill is meant to nullify the election in St. Paul.
Again, nobody in this committee has said that. I'm not aware of those comments. Our issues and our comments should be related to this committee, to this bill. Not wild accusations that roll in everything across the universe. So, Senator Weber, you have final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that it's important as we consider this bill, and we consider a number of elements that have arisen since the adoption of rent control in St. Paul. You know, one of the questions that I had posed recently was how much investment in new housing has been at least deferred at this point until there's many questions answered. And the number that was given me was close to $1 billion of investment has been deferred, projects that have been stopped from going forward because of this proposed or this ordinance that was passed. Recently, I believe there was definitions of rent that came out from the city. What would be covered by this rent control ordinance? It's my understanding that what has been proposed or adopted at this point is that even if a building receives an income in their utility cost, all their other costs, they aren't allowed to charge extra rent in order to cover that other than the 3% that's allowed within the ordinance. And certainly they're not allowed to pass along the full increase of property taxes that accrues to them every year. levy limits are not actually new to the state of Minnesota. There were local levy limits for a number of years. Actually, with the years that I was in local, part of the years that I was in local government, there were levy limits in place. And actually, those happened to be 3% at that time. And quite frankly, I despise them. But I also despise an ability, the city, a local government, or any government, coming in and telling a business such as the rental market, you can't charge more than this because you're too high. Well, one of the reasons that their rents are high is because of the amount of taxes that they pay in the first place, or the amount of uncontrolled expenses that they have, or the amount of extra money they've had to pay for security because their communities have not kept their facilities safe. And they've had to hire additional security in order to provide the safety for their residents. Quite frankly, that's not fair either. Everybody that makes an investment, whether it be in housing or business or anything else, has the right to have a fair return. And when we as government start to interfere with that, regardless of the level of government, local, state, federal, quite frankly, it's a problem. I'm not a member of the bonding committee, but it's my understanding that when the bonding committee, Senate bonding committee, made their metro tour, the mayor of St. Paul made an impassioned plea for more money for housing. When he was asked how much money the rent control issue has cost the city of St. Paul, he refused to answer. You know, I've always supported housing amounts in the bonding bill, but money included in a bonding bill this year, I'm not so sure. The money is intended to help all communities in Minnesota, but unfortunately, as I mentioned earlier, the rules that we have placed on it make it of a diminishing return for the communities in my district. Actually make it as a diminished capability for communities in this district. And I doubt, Mr. Chairman and members, that any amount of money that we can provide under the current rules will actually make a difference to allow developers to build more multifamily housing in the city of St. Paul due to the rent control measure that is there. There's obviously a lot of things that go into our property tax equation in Minnesota. You know, the one thing we commented here a couple of meetings ago, we were getting a lot of calls about our property taxes, residential, commercial, industrial. Commercial industrial taxes, quite frankly, the state benefits from those because of the general tax levy that is out there. At the end of the day, as I mentioned, there's very few things that we as a property tax committee can recommend that don't really become the pebble in the pool. You throw the pebble in and there's ripples that go out and they affect many people, many businesses. As I stated earlier, when I was in local government as a council member and a mayor, I really despised the local levy limits that were put in place. And yet at some point, we also need to recognize the element of service that communities have to provide their communities. And part of it is, you know, to make sure that there is sufficient number of properties to rent. Because the fewer properties you have, you're just going to start to increase the demand. And you know, there's actually been a number of proposals that have been made at the local level now to try and moderate the effects of this rent control ordinance. Well, maybe we shouldn't have it in place for the first 15 or 20 years of a property's existence. That helps with the overall initial costs of financing and what have you. But by the time a property is 15 or 20 years old, it needs some major repair elements. Whether we're talking doors, windows, air conditioning, heating units, and some of them won't even last to 20 years, 15 years. And yet we're restricting their ability to actually charge enough rent to afford an account, a replacement account that allows them to make the necessary improvements. And for those properties that are older already, they're not going to be allowed to produce any type of an account or a reserve in order to replace and upgrade them as well. And so what we're going to wind up is we'll see a deterioration, unfortunately, of the housing, and then we'll complain about that. No one should be forced to live in inferior housing.
No children should be able to do that. But when I see communities that take actions that will eventually lead to that, then I believe it's time for us to step up and say something. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I will use that as my final comment and let you lay the bill over.
Thank you, Senator Weber. Yeah, it's just an attempt to keep affordable rental housing in these cities, just working on solutions here. So with that, members, Senate File 3882 will be laid over. Senator Weber, any other business before the committee?
No, sir.
I presume we're meeting again next Wednesday?
We may, and we will be, and we may have a special meeting somewhere in there too, but that's to be determined yet.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Weber. Thank you, members. We're adjourned.